Hi, friends. Welcome back to Out of Focus. I'm Shannon Stewart, and today's episode is not just a story. It's a rescue story. It's for the person who's ever found themselves in a place they never thought they'd be, carrying shame, regret, pain, wondering if they've gone too far or if their life could ever be different. I'm sitting down with Emma, who has walked through seasons of deep brokenness, loss, and darkness. And yet, what God has done in her life is nothing short of powerful. This conversation is honest. It's heavy in moments, but it's also full of hope. Because her story doesn't end in shame. It ends in redemption. Emma, I'm so honored to have you here. So I was scrolling Instagram one day and one of your reels popped up. It was where you were sharing your story, your testimony, and I was so captivated by what you were sharing. And I finished the entire reel and my spirit was just moved. I was like, praise you, Jesus. I need to ask her to be on my podcast. Your story is so powerful and it gives God great glory. And you were a great encouragement to me. And I was just so proud of you for being willing to share your story. But thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I'm so excited to be even invited on this. Super excited to be here. But yeah, so are you talking about the Reel of Passion Conference?
I think? Yes. So we'll dive into that. So take me back to the beginning. What was life like for you growing up? What were you like as a little girl?
Yeah. So a little girl, I was so bubbly. I was in all the things. Like I had a great childhood. My parents are a blessing. I didn't grow up in, they split when I was around like 7, I believe it was. But growing up, like I loved my parents. Everything was good. But I never had like a sense of like identity. And I think my testimony started off because of like having identity issues. I didn't know who I was. And so I was always like the bigger girl. When I got to middle school, I just never felt like seen or heard or valued. I was just always searching, like people pleasing and just trying to fit in wherever I could fit in. And then high school kind of came around and I got into a relationship that was just ended up being very abusive. Like physically, he did just very inhumane things. And I was probably like 14, 15 when we started being together. And it was good when it was good, you know, but when it got bad, he started doing meth. And when he started doing meth, it kind of changed the whole trajectory of our lives. And so he just went crazy, honestly. And he just did things that, you know, just made me question everything. And I didn't know what to do. It got so bad to the point where it was like, I think they always are like, oh, why didn't you leave? Why didn't you get out? When you're so young and you've been like brainwashed into something and you think it's like normal at the time. He took me out of school. I wasn't in school. Like I completely left high school. We were doing all of the drugs together. Like it just went down a very bad path. And I think he kind of started just this span of like craziness for me. I wouldn't say it was his fault necessarily, but I was so young and I didn't really know anything other than that. And I was just always looking for like this love and looking for like a sense of identity. And he gave me that, or so I thought in that moment. So I stayed. And then it got so bad to the point where like I couldn't leave. Like I felt like my life was in danger if I were to leave. And so I stayed there. There was just a lot of things that like I didn't go to school. My parents had no idea where I was. Like I didn't have a phone. He took me like hours away. It was just like we lived house to house, like in drug houses and just so many things, being exposed to so many different kinds of drugs and people and situations at such a young age. I feel like it just opened this like whole new reality for me of like, I have no idea what's going on.
Did he hide who he was at first? And so you didn't really know. And then once you got involved, it was like maybe a little bit too late.
I would say yes. I don't think that he was like this evil going bad person. I think that he also had a lot of trauma from just his life. And so like, I think he was just going through like a very hard time and I ended up getting in between that. And then it was just like he started these drugs and just started lashing out. So I don't think there was like a sense of like, oh, I found out he was a bad person. I don't think he's a bad person. I just think that there's a lot of times that people don't heal from things. And it just quantified into being this big, what we could call a monster, which it looked like he was a monster. But in reality, I think he was just a hurting person as well and didn't know how to control those emotions. And then drugs got attached to him.
How did you eventually get out of that relationship and leave?
Yeah. So I remember, like, I literally ran away on foot and I was all bruised up. I had bruises all over my body. Like, I looked insane. And I got a hold of someone's phone and I called a kid from my school. I'll never forget him. And he Ubered me like 2 hours away to go back to the high school. When I got back to the high school, I stayed in the bathroom like all day long. But someone came into the bathroom and saw that I was in there and had like bruises. Like, I had a ripped shirt, like all just crazy stuff. This was in Florida. I remember I took the bus home and I fell straight asleep when I got home. And my mom was a teacher at the time. And so she didn't know that I was home when I got home because I was in high school. So she was a middle school teacher and they get out later. I remember sleeping and hearing like a knock on my door or something like that. And I opened the door and it's my mom. And like, she's like, she's not here, basically. Emma's not here. You know what I'm saying? She didn't even know. And they end up coming upstairs and like checking my room. I'm in there. She has no idea that I'm in there. And it's just like two or three cops that were in there. And they were basically like all men. And they were like, we need you to strip down. Basically, we need to see your body because we've had a lot of reports that you have bruises and you're not at school. And like, we need to make sure that you're okay. And so I just start sobbing and I'm like, mom, tell them to leave, please. I need them to get out of my room for a second. And so I just got naked in front of my mom and she saw everything and she collapsed. I had bruises like all over my body. My mom is a saving grace, but she helped me just get out of that situation. It was the hardest and toughest thing for not only me, but her, like as her little girl, but she helped me through everything. And like, we had to like just start from ground zero and build up the trust, build up just like being okay again. So I had to go back to school. I had to be at every class, everything on time, or they were going to come back out. And I lied to them and I never told on this person. I said that I had gotten jumped and that I was just like in a bad situation with girls and stuff like that. And
were you afraid that he was going to find you and maybe do that again?
Yeah, I was just, I didn't know what he was, I mean, he's was capable of many things. And I didn't want to put him in danger, which would eventually maybe put me in danger or my family. He knows where I live. Just different things that you think about when you're in a survival mode. But it ended up, I got out and I went back to school and things were good for quite some time. And then I got into a very bad car accident and I lost the ability to walk. When I lost the ability to walk, my memory is very bad. I think it's a trauma response a little bit because I prayed for so long, or not even prayed, but I just wished for so long that I would forget things. I didn't want to remember anything. And now that like I try to go back to remember them, it's so foggy. My prayer right now is like, God, help me to remember these things because it's important. But my memory of like, I would say like middle school to now is just so foggy.
Maybe in a way, God's protecting you because maybe those memories may not be good for you emotionally and spiritually. And it's a chapter in the past. Would you say that this car accident was rock bottom, or when they showed up at your mom's house was rock bottom, or were they both?
I would say neither of them were rock bottom. I would say, I mean, within those like 5 years of my life, I just to like make things shorter. So I had a very abusive relationship. I got into a very bad car accident. I couldn't walk. I lost.
Can you tell me more about the car accident?
Yeah. It wasn't even a car accident. I would be lying if I said that. It was like a big side by side, like an ATV, but like an extra large one. And basically I was in it with some drunk drivers and it flipped. And when it flipped, my leg got caught out on the outside of it. So it didn't have any doors on it. And so when it flipped, my leg got landed on and then they tried to pull me out of it, but I had a seatbelt on. So they had to redrop the ATV. So my leg broke on basically both sides. I had 14 like broken bones in my leg. Wow. It was crazy. And so I was bedridden, or not bedridden, but I had to do hospital homebound. So I was out of school again. Everything went back to just being just at home, and which was a blessing because I feel like there was a lot of things going on and it was a blessing to just be at home and to dwell and to just think about life for a little bit. But so the accident happened and then I wasn't supposed to walk for quite some time. And then COVID happened. So I was at hospital homebound, so I didn't go to school. And then COVID happened, and that was my senior year, and I was done. My high school was just so quick to me. It felt like it happened in an instant. I did have a freshman year and a sophomore year, but like after that, it was just between that guy and COVID and all the things, it was quick. So the car accident happened, and then I lost someone. We weren't dating at the time, but a very, very close person to me was murdered. And so that was just such a difficult situation to go through. Losing a loved one anyway, family or not, is super hard. And then I started getting into like really bad drugs and alcoholism and being around, again, just having no like sense of identity or worth or feeling like I belong anywhere. And then I started going to the clubs, and then it became like money and men. And then I started doing just things for money. I was doing many drugs, doing whatever kind of for money, and just being in situations that I just shouldn't have been in. And then I got diagnosed with a sexually transmitted disease, and I feel like that was probably rock bottom. It was probably the toughest time that, I mean, my whole life, I've always loved kids. I've always wanted to have, I remember growing up and like being with my grandma and watching Say Yes to the Dress. So a wedding to me was always so cool. I couldn't wait to be married and have a baby. And then when I found out that I had this disease, it was like everything crashed. And then that's when, if I thought I had no sense of identity prior to that, that hit it. I mean, that made it worse. After that, it was like, I have no reason to live. I'm never going to find someone that loves me. I'm never going to do anything. And then I met this person, and I thought he was my saving grace, honestly. I thought he was like going to be my saving grace, and found out that he was married. And when I found out, I actually knew that he was married when we met. But like every married man says, is he's getting a divorce. And so being so young, I was like 19. Being so young, I believed him. We were together every day, 24/7. This was now in Miami. That was like my person, you know? And so I felt crazily for him. I found out that I'm pregnant, and I tell him basically that I'm pregnant. And I was so excited. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm about to have this baby. I'm like getting out of this crazy life that I've lived in. And I'm so excited. After I found out that I'm pregnant, I find out that his wife is pregnant, and they're happily married, and she loves him, and this is her husband. And I've just been living in a complete bubble of a lie for the past year of my life, and I lost it. I think that was another rock bottom. I got an abortion, and the grief of that is truly unbearable. I want to be a mom so bad, still to this day.
Can you talk about what goes on inwardly when you have an abortion for the people that are contemplating that?
Yeah, if I'm going to be completely honest with you and transparent with you, when I got the abortion, I was in the club the next day just killing a bottle. So I never realized like what was going on. My whole life, I've always just thrown everything under the rug and just pushed it forward through all of the things. I've never really sat and dealt with anything or just allowed my emotion to be an emotion. It was just like, okay, this happened, it's to the next. And so I didn't feel it until I would say after a while, like after I came to Christ and had that like big realization that you had an abortion. Like I came to a realization. I mean, in the moment, it was tough, of course, like when I had the abortion, it destroyed me. I have videos on my phone, and I was looking back at them the other day, and I was just sobbing because I'm like, oh, I wish I could just give her a hug. Like she has no idea, you know? So I would say in the moment, it was just, I didn't care to necessarily feel it, but also that day, I think, was just super, super, super hard, and just understanding what's going on. I remember I was at my friend's house, and her dog randomly came and just laid on my belly. And I have a video of this, and I'm crying. I'm like, I'm about to get an abortion, and this dog is just laying on my belly. I just felt like it meant something. But I know at that point, I couldn't keep the baby. I wish that I would have. I would have had a little toddler right now. But he's in heaven, or she, and so one day, hopefully, we reunite. But after I had the abortion, it was the hardest thing to get away from this man. It was so hard. But I remember that was the first time in my life where I felt conviction. And in the moment, I didn't really know what conviction was, because there's so many things that have happened to me just young, like sexually, that just shouldn't have happened to me. And just being around people and men, and just shouldn't have happened to me. And so it happened, and I felt horrible, and I would cry, and then the next day would happen, and it would just be the next day. I never sat with anything. And so I think my come to Christ has been so hard, because he has brought every single one of those things up, and I've had to sit and deal with it. And that has been, I mean, insane. But getting away from this man was just so hard, I think, just because I had so many attachments to him. And it was just like, it was the hardest thing I probably ever had to do. But during that time of just getting away from him, I would say within like the next year, things were finally starting to look up. I moved back home. I was working. I was a bartender working at a little like hole in the wall, like cute little brewery place. They were doing karaoke nights on Friday. I felt like, you know, the Hannah Montana movies are like, where it's like a big city girl and then she comes to like this little small town and like life is, I literally felt like that.
I'm from a small town, so I get it.
Yeah. It was such like a, whoa, this is a whole reality shift. But everything started, it was finally okay again. I felt normal. I started going to church with my mom. I got involved in the church. I was leading in kids ministry.
Were you raised in church?
I would say I knew about God my whole life. We went to church. My family, we went to church. Now, were we like a God-fearing household and like I understood what God really meant? No. Like we went to church. You know what I'm saying? Like I think it was just necessarily for the fact of like going to church. I don't remember feeling anything of it. I don't remember like, and again, I could be wrong. My family could have had moments where they sat me down and talked about God. I just don't remember my childhood like at all. But I do know like we did go to church. Now it just wasn't anything like for me or I felt nothing. I remember I liked worshiping as a little girl. I always remember that. Actually, I got baptized in the church when I was like 13, I think, or like 12. And so I always had this like love for God. I went on a mission trip when I was young to Guatemala. I was put in places and situations, but it was merely for the fact of like, I've always loved people and I've always loved children. So I wasn't going to church or necessarily cared about God. It was just about, I love worshiping and I love being around kids. And so that was like my, and then it probably, I stopped going to church when I was like, I don't know. Honestly,
you said you weren't sure you could trust God. Where do you think that came from?
I just never had a personal relationship with him. And I feel like for me to trust someone, I want to know you. And I didn't know him. And so I think like getting to know him now is like where my trust has finally come. If someone were to come in my house right now, I'm not going to trust you. But if you were around me for a while and I got to know you and your attributes and your characteristics and like, okay, well, maybe this isn't a bad person and maybe I can start to trust you. And I feel like that was my walk with him. I gave him a space later in life and in my 20s. I'm only 24. But later, I say later in life, like I'm like 28. Later in my early 20s, I would say, I gave him room to move. And when I finally found out who God was, but just after all of that, getting away from this married man, to go back to like my story, I got diagnosed with alopecia. And that was probably the hardest thing that I've ever went through. I was going through the whole thing with him. I was like, everything was just so hard. And I just remember being like, God, I cannot do it anymore. Like, I'm done. Like, this is so hard. I lost all my hair. I went completely bald, literally. And I mean, as women, our identity is in our hair. You know, like, we care about our hair. We look at ourselves in our hair. And wigs are around. And thank God for wigs. But when you have to wear a wig, it's different than wanting to. I have wigs and I put on black hair sometimes just because I'm like, oh, like, they're here. But when I had to do it, it was just like, oh, my gosh, they're. I couldn't get out of bed. I quit my job. I couldn't brush my teeth. I didn't take showers. I gained so much weight. I had no reason to live. And I think all of those things and all of that happened within 5 years. So I would say between I was like 15 to 20, like all of that happened. And so I felt like every year I hit rock bottom. Every year I got evicted. I got my first apartment with my best friend. We got evicted from that apartment. When I say I lived a worldly life, I mean scamming and drugs and everything that you could imagine. Miami, just put everything you could imagine in South Florida. I did it. I've done all of it. I've like literally done it all. And so I was just,
when you were doing these things, what were you looking for? What were you searching for?
I think just like worth and identity. And I had this void in my life that nothing filled it. I've tried drugs. I've tried men. I've tried money. I've tried all of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've tried it all. And I just got to a point where it was like, I've done it. I don't have any other reason to live because I've done it. And now that I don't feel like I have a reason to live, I'm just doing whatever, however much to make money, whatever I need to, like scamming, like literally everything. It got to a point where I couldn't go lower. Legitimately, when I lost all my hair, it was just like, God, there's no way I could go lower than this. There's just no way. And my sister, she ended up telling me she wanted to move to Georgia. And I just remember being like, can I please come with you? I have to get away from Florida. It's eating me. I'm literally going to die just from life. and ended up moving to Georgia with her, which was my literal saving grace. Georgia has been the best thing. I live in Atlanta currently. And one day I was just like in my bed. I'm going through alopecia. I'd quit my job. I couldn't get out of bed. I gained so much weight. I felt like a burden to everybody and everything, to myself. There was nothing. And I was scrolling on Instagram and I saw something that said, call on heaven. It was a video for Passion Conference. And I was like, that looks so good, but just not for me. And I scrolled past it and that was like the end of it. And so I remember like 2 days, literally 2 days before Passion Conference, the spirit woke me up and was like, check for tickets. You have to be in the room. And I checked for tickets and everything was sold out. I tried to buy one from this girl. There's like people that like will scam fake tickets for like anything.
Oh, I know. Yes.
And so I ended up getting a hold of one of them and they didn't send me a ticket, but I paid for it. And then there was like this group that Passion puts on. It's like Passion Party of One for people that are going alone. And some angel of an amazing person was like, hey, I can't make it. Here's my ticket. I went to Passion Conference and this was like 3 years ago now. And it reminds me of the man at the pool of Bethsaida when he was looking for everything else to heal him, everything else. And he was like, no one's helping me. I've been here for so long. And it took one encounter with Jesus that changed him and he was healed and he got to stand up and walk. And I feel like that moment was my pool at Bethsaida. It brings me to tears. It changed me. And it's a feeling that is so hard to explain to an unbeliever or to someone who doesn't understand the Holy Spirit or like the presence of God. But I mean, wow, I literally have never been the same. I am a completely different person now.
So you had an encounter with him at Passion?
At Passion, yes.
Did you feel like all the shame, all the mistakes, all the regret, did it just go off of you and you felt freer?
No, I wouldn't say that at all. I would say I just felt like everything I've been searching for was like here. I didn't lose shame in that moment. I didn't lose guilt in that moment. I didn't gain an identity in that moment. It wasn't like a fairy tale, like firework. Oh, here it is. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like that. It was just like I felt this like presence and it was just like, this is what you've been yearning for. Like, this is what you've been looking for. It's here. And it wasn't in the people. It wasn't in the church. It was in that moment that I had with him that completely changed everything.
So he revealed that he is who he says he is and he's real.
Yeah, he revealed himself to me in that moment, 1,000%.
Do you think in the past that your view of God possibly got distorted because of the men that were around you?
I don't know. I wouldn't say my view of God got distorted because of the men. I think I did have an idolization issue. And so I think I placed men above God, but I don't think that they distorted my way of how I see God. But I also didn't see God as a savior. I didn't see him as a father. I didn't see him as what he claims to be because I didn't give him room to be that in my life. Like, I think a lot of people want the promises of God, but they don't want the process of God. And so the process of God is it's pruning. I mean, we can look at Jesus as his life was full of suffering and like we all want to be like God. Like my prayers for so long was like, Jesus, make me look like you. He's like, you want to be like me? Well, you're about to suffer, girl. Like, you know, and not that he wants us to suffer. I mean, he is a heavenly father, but his life is just, it's beautiful because where he placed his life was on the cross. And so he tells us to pick up your cross and to walk with it. And so that is pick up your suffering, pick up what is killing you and walk with it. And so that's where I think your testimonies are just so important. And like, it's so easy to have shame and to be in fear. I've shared things on social media that I thought I would take to the grave. Like, I never thought that I would share half of this stuff on social media. But when you realize that your life isn't about you, and it's about the grand scheme of everything points back to Jesus. And I think once you realize that, and it takes a while, I'm still in the process of learning who he is and figuring out myself. I'm still in that process. It's been the most pruning thing that I've ever gone through, but I have never been happier. Talk about the fruit. I have a joy that makes no sense. Like literally, I am just happy-go-lucky all the time. And like things are bad. Things happen to all of us and life is so hard. When things are bad, it gives God room to be good. And so when it says count it all as joy, like I truly believe that like the bad things that have happened to us, if you can switch your perspective and truly count it as joy and allow him to have the bad, because everything that the enemy meant for bad, God will and can make it good. And it says that his word does not return void, you know? And so it takes a while to grasp that. And like, I wish I knew this years ago. I'm the biggest crybaby ever. Like, I cry all the time just because I'm like, I never believed you, God. I never believed your word. I never sat and tried with you. I tried everything else. But I think he gives grace for that, because I think that like the things that I used to literally want to take my life over and have tried to take my life over are the things that I'm telling you about on this podcast. And so he's turned my shame to his glory, like completely. And so I think that like my ministry is going after the ones that the devil thinks he's gotten and just pulling them back.
If they're listening and they find themselves with crippling shame, what would you want them to know? They have this overwhelming thinking that they're a nobody. They can't be used by God anymore. They're disqualified. What would you want that person to know?
This is a question that I get asked a lot. And honestly, I struggle with it a little bit just because it's so hard to tell someone something when they're in that mindset, you know? And I think it's a big, like, when you get to a point where you're in a hole, anything anybody tells you, it doesn't really matter. Like, it might matter for that second, but it comes down to the point of you have to want it more than your hurt hurts you, if that makes sense. Like, I think for so long, I didn't even understand like my feelings or what shame meant and all the things. And now that I realize what shame is, it's such a tactic that the enemy uses. Like, in the glory of God, and this is what I would want to say to someone who has shame. Shame is fleeting. You know, shame is fleeting. Just like if happiness is fleeting. If I were to kick you right now, you wouldn't be happy anymore, because it's the joy that lasts forever, right? So happiness is fleeting, just like shame is fleeting. Like, what I once was so ashamed for and literally could not get out of bed has nothing to do with today. So that shame is fleeting. So it's just a state of emotion that you're in. And once you can grasp the fact of like, you know, this is just how I'm feeling. This is not how God looks at me, because God is, he's not going to condemn you. And what, like, if you allow him to use your shame, I was actually every morning, funny story, I read a psalm. And 2 days ago, I had this video that I was so like, I still get a little nervy about posting certain things because I'm like, wow, I'm sharing a lot. But there was a video that I was just, I was like, I don't know. I felt the tug to post it, but I was like, this is me very being vulnerable. And I was just like, oof, like, God, I can't do it today. I can't, but just give me the strength. If this is what you want, like, give it to me. And the next day, I kid you not, Shannon, the next day I woke up and I opened up, I believe it was Psalm 4. It's either Psalm 3 or Psalm 4. And I kid you not, word for word, it says, how long are you going to turn my glory into your shame? It clocked me.
Wow.
It literally, the next day, I started sobbing. I was like, God, I surrender everything. I'm done. Like, this, I still have had some shame built up in me. And, you know, if anyone can relate to anybody who's watching, I'm sure I've been in many of your situations. And I thought God couldn't use me. I thought I was done. It wasn't even a thought that he could use me. I've split up families. I've done everything, like really bad things. I was like, there's no way. There's no way that God could use me. When I saw that Bible verse, it changed something in me. And when I tell you that God, if you allow him, he will use the thing that you once felt the most shame for. I mean, he will. I just spoke at a conference of almost 50,000 people and told them the things 3 years prior that I was sitting in my bed and wanted to kill myself over and felt God wouldn't use me and I'm worthless. I have no identity. And that's where he met me. I didn't come to him clean. There were times where after conference, like I was changed and like, but I was still sinful. I was still at the clubs. I would go to work and get drunk as a skunk and be at church the next day hungover. You know what I'm saying? And I was still having sex and I was still doing all of these things. And I didn't come to him as clean. I just came to him as who I was. And I think everyone like tries to ask me like, Emma, like, how did you do this? And how did you get to a point where you don't have sex or you don't listen to secular music? Or we can't do it on ourselves. I cannot wake up one day and be like, you know what, tomorrow I'm done. I'm done with this, because that would be me moving off of my strength. The only thing you have to do is get in proximity to Jesus. That is it. When I got into proximity with him, and when I tell you, Shannon, things just fell. The conviction got harder. The conviction got louder. I stopped having sex. I stopped smoking weed. I stopped doing all, I stopped caring about money. I stopped like just things that were like, I didn't try to stop all these things. Like I just wanted to be in a relationship with maybe one that can, you don't even have to heal me, but just love me. I was just searching for love and getting close to him. Things just stopped. It just like one decision a day. Truly, like one decision a day. It's in the atomic habits. Truly. I don't think discipline is something that you obtain. I think it's reached by just daily habits and doing one thing a day.
Well, I loved how you said, and I don't want anyone to miss this, come as you are. God does not expect us to come to him perfect or all put together or polished. He wants the real version, the honest version, which leads me to my next question. How does it feel to be someone who once felt beyond hope, now helping others find it?
It's insane. I'm just in awe. I lead a group of college girls right now. And not only them, I mean, my life is ministry to the point where I'm praying with people in the elevator. It just doesn't matter. The hope that I have now and just the faith that I know about in God, my Father, I want to share that with everybody. And so just being in a place where he has used me to speak to his children after feeling like I wasn't one of his and now being adopted into that sonship with him, it's incredible. It truly is. I had a worship night the other day with my girls at church. Again, I lead a group of college girls, and I just saw them like kneeling down and bowing at their knees and sobbing in tears. And I was just like, God has trusted me with his children. Do you have children?
I don't. I watch my niece and nephew, so they're like my children, and I'm actually over our children's ministry. So I view them as my children, so I pour into them, but I don't have any of my own. Although I thought I was going to, it wasn't in God's plan for me. And I never tried to have kids. I know it's on social media that I can't have kids. Never tried to have kids. Yeah.
Social media will, they'll say it all about you. But I say all this to say, when you have kids or you have kids in student ministry, whether it's your own or your sister's baby, whatever it may be, you don't send your kids to someone that you do not trust, right? You wouldn't send them to a stranger. And so the fact that God has sent me his children just shows me that he trusts me with them. And to me, that is a huge calling. I think that everyone looks at like, everyone nowadays, if you're in the Christian world, you want to be a speaker, you want to be a pastor, you want to be in ministry, you want to be a Christian influencer. Like it's just this grand scheme of things right now. It's just like, oh, I want to be heard. I think everybody wants to be heard and that's great. But many are called and few are chosen. And I truly believe that. And I think when you've been called or you are chosen, I think the weight is very heavy, but just the grace that he has placed on my life and the trust that he has for me, like, I don't take it lightly. I cannot live like everybody lives. I cannot do what everybody does. And it just shows me like his love for me is just unfailing.
You were making a powerful impact on those girls. I am so proud of you. And you get to tell them and maybe encourage them not to go down the path that you did. Or maybe they find themselves in the path that you once were in. And now you can encourage them that there's hope on the other side. Because look at your life. It's been transformed. Your mind's been renewed. And Jesus has given you a new heart.
Yes, completely. 100%. Sometimes I look in the mirror and I'm like, I don't recognize myself in the best way possible. He has made me just, I used to be kind of like this hard body, kind of mean. I'm the most like fairy soft girl. I'm wearing ballet slippers. I'm like, who is this girl? I feel like he has made me just this princess peach of a little girl of his that I'm just on his hip, honestly, like a dad with his daughter on his hip. I truly believe that that's like where I am.
What does your life look like now? Are you in school?
I never went to college, which is funny. And I never cared about knowledge or wisdom or school or anything like that. And I think it's so funny because now being where I am, I'm obsessed with neuroscience. I'm obsessed with learning. I'm obsessed with like having a better vocabulary. And it's just so funny because I'm like, where was this? But life right now, I live truly in an abundance. Things are hard. Things are always hard. Not always, but I mean, like life happens for you, just happens for me. I live with Jesus. I literally live with him. And he has made everything so worth it. And it's me and him. I think my walk has been like the most consecrated solo journey that I've ever been on. I think for the past 4 years, I've truly been like alone, but I've been in a space and I've curated a space for him to move in. And I think that's what's so special is like, we always want God to move, but we live this big and grand and fast life. And it's like, we don't hear him. We don't hear him clearly because we have all the voices of the world and the noise and the social media. And it comes down to just the little things that I've done and like the practical ways to live by, to just be with him. And the things I thought I once wanted, I don't even care for anymore. And like, he has just made everything worth living. Like, truly, I love my life genuinely. And I'm so proud to be able to say that because it wasn't always this way.
Do you have a favorite scripture verse?
I feel like it's in seasons. Like, my favorite scripture verse is in seasons. The first scripture I ever memorize with Psalm 23. And I think that is just beautiful. It's so cliche. Like, everyone talks about Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, you know? But I think that verse just started understanding. I saw a video on TikTok like 4 years ago. And it was basically this older lady and she broke down Psalm 24. And it changed everything for me. I've never seen scripture truly broken down by that. I don't think I necessarily have like favorite scriptures. There's books in the Bible that I love, like the woman who cleaned his feet with her tears and her hair in the house of the Pharisee. I mean, that story is so like grand of things for me personally, because I related to her. And the Pharisee was like, why? If you knew her sins, you wouldn't even look at her, basically. And God just was like, snapped back at him like, oh no, like, this is my girl. Her sins are forgiven. Her many sins are forgiven, actually. And so I think for me, I never really had a Bible verse that like I loved. They talk about like Jeremiah 29:11, just all the ones that are more talked about. But I think for me, it's not even about a verse. There's just so many books that like I truly enjoy, and stories that just have like the woman with the alabaster jar, just different things that like have really touched my heart more than just a verse has.
Do you ever watch The Chosen?
I have watched The Chosen. I never really got like, I didn't stay consistent in The Chosen. I think I've never been like diagnosed with this, but I'm pretty sure I have like ADHD. I can't focus. Like, I cannot watch a TV show to save my life. And it may not be ADHD. I'm definitely self-diagnosing right now, but I don't have it in me to like sit down and watch 50 seasons of it. I just can't do it.
It took me a little while to get into for some reason, but once you hang in there, it's so awesome. If people want to find you, how can they connect with you? You want to share your Instagram or?
Yeah, I love to. I'm on all platforms pretty much. My Instagram is my full name, which is Emma Shimatero. And then TikTok, someone had like my name, or maybe it was like an old account I made. I don't know, but I can't change it to my name. So it's Pretty Baby M, which was what it used to be for like my whole life. I just haven't changed it. So my Instagram is Emma Shimatero. My TikTok is Pretty Baby M. And then I do have a YouTube as well. I never really post on it. There's like two videos, but I'm going to start. So that's how they can find me.
That's awesome. I have one more question. If someone only remembers one thing from your story, what do you want it to be?
I've never been asked this question. That's a great question. I think I would say doubt or fear or shame doesn't disqualify you from anything that the Lord wants for you, that his will always be done. And whether that you believe that or not, I mean, we can talk about Sarah in Genesis when God was like promising her a baby and she basically laughed at him and she was like, oh, I'm too old. Like, I'm not going to have a baby. And like her laugh was like her disbelief kind of, and her disbelief didn't delay his plans for her. Like, she still had a baby. He still used it to connect with her. And I think a lot of times, like, as Christians or new believers or anybody that is trying to find something, we think that our doubt disqualifies us, or because we don't really believe, or we don't believe as much as she believes, or we don't have as much faith as they have. Like, that doesn't disqualify you. It actually gives Jesus a place to move in. And so I think it's so special to just acknowledge, like, run to the Father. He is the only thing that will sustain you in this life. And I say that from personal belief and like from just where I'm at, like the only thing that has sustained me was Jesus. And so I would say if there's one thing that you would take from my story is your doubt doesn't disqualify you.
I think your story shouts that Jesus Christ is a redeeming God, and he can redeem and he can restore, and he can rewrite chapters, and he can use it all for his glory and for your good. And I cannot wait to see how he uses you in the future. I so appreciate your vulnerability, your willingness to share your story. And I just pray that he continues to open up doors, because I think you can have an impact on a lot of people who are searching, but they don't know what they're searching for. And what they're really searching for is him, because only he can fill the void.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This has been great. People have asked me to speak on podcasts since Passion. I'm like, me? Like, I'm nobody, but it's so fun. It's exciting. So thank you for allowing me to come on your platform. I think it's so special. And I think what you're doing is so special. And I think that continue to also do what you're doing, because you're going to change as many lives as I can. Not that it's a rat race, or not that it's a race, but I think building the kingdom is so important, and you're definitely doing it.
We want to build that kingdom, girl. Thank you so much, Emma.
Thank you, Shannon. Thank you so much.
Emma's story is a great reminder that there is no pit too deep where God's grace is not deeper still. He alone gives beauty for ashes. Don't forget to like and subscribe and follow along so you never miss an episode. If this conversation encouraged you, would you share it with someone who needs hope? Thank you so much for joining us today. Remember, when life feels out of focus, there is always one who brings clarity. We'll see you next time.